Okay, let us begin. So, I think I have your list of halachas just to remind myself what some of the issues are. But I think the main issues we spoke about on Shabbos, at least we started speaking about on Shabbos, was the main questions I get are more regarding cleaning for Pesach and buying products for Pesach. So this stuff is like about Siyum Bechorim. It's Thursday morning. If anyone's the firstborn, then you have to fast, and we're going to make a Siyum in Shul. Dikas Chametz. Okay. Oh, this is funny. This is a year when Shabbos falls out. Erev Pesach falls out on Shabbos. This is not this year. Anyway, so Bedikas Chametz is related to preparing for Chametz, for cleaning. So I introduced the class on Shabbos with an email that I got from somebody who is in the skincare business, and they had skincare products that had oatmeal in them. So they asked me if they're allowed to use those products on Pesach, either for their business or for themselves. And basically I told them yes. And this person asked me, they said they were all concerned because they think they're being lenient because of God. They don't know if God's will, they're doing God's will, or if they're doing it because they want to be lenient and they have their own incentive to be lenient. So I explained to them that I don't believe that it's wrong to be lenient on things that are allowed. So I explained to her that it's allowed in Pesach to use products that are not food, like shampoos and creams and all that, even if they're made from oats or things like that, because most of the poskim hold that it's, the Chazon Ish says this straight out, and the Chazon Ish is pretty strict about a lot of things in Pesach, a lot of things in general. A lot of things in Pesach, my teacher used to, he was from Bnei Brak, and he's generally lenient. I don't understand, he has his custom. He had all the boys come over right after Purim to clean every book in his house, and this guy had a big library. And it took an entire month to clean every single book. And he didn't use half the books, right? And the reason is because he held the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish says something very strange. He says that you have to get rid of all the crumbs in your whole house, because he says all the crumbs can combine together for a kezias, which means that a person's not allowed to have the amount of a half a slice of bread of chametz in their house on Pesach, because that's, unless you sell it, of course, because that's called keeping chametz in your house, and you're not allowed to keep chametz in your property on Pesach, called bayira, bayimatzah. That's a prohibition in the Torah, a negative prohibition to keep chametz in your house. That only applies to a kezias. That only applies to the amount equivalent to a half a slice of bread. So, the Chazon Ish says something very strange. He bases it on a Mishnah, but basically what he says is that all the crumbs in your house will combine together to be the equivalent of a half a slice of bread, which is really crazy, which basically means you have to clean your entire house of all crumbs, because they could all combine together, right? So he's very unique in that respect. Most poskim hold you don't have to worry about that unless it's dough. And the reason, the logic for that is the Mishnah that he's referring to, the Meiri, for instance, says that's only referring to dough, because dough sticks together. So if you have like a bakery with dough, so then you have to worry about all the pieces in your bakery sticking together, potentially sticking together, since they could potentially stick together. So that could add up to the amount that will be the amount of chametz, if the dough is chametz. But that wouldn't apply to crumbs, because crumbs don't stick together. So according to that logic, a person doesn't have to worry about crumbs unless they have a bakery that has to worry about dough, pieces of dough in different parts of the store, for instance. So the point is that he's very strict about a lot of things in Pesach. So that's why my teacher used to clean all the books in his house. He was worried that, A, you might use the book over food, and then for the like benchers, so the crumbs are going to go into your food. That's legitimate. If a person's going to use benchers on Pesach, they should make sure the benchers are clean, have crumbs, and if you can't, then you shouldn't use those benchers for Pesach, because you might eat them, you might eat the crumbs in your benchers, which is very common to have crumbs in benchers that will fall into your food. There's a rabbinical restriction about eating food that even has one crumb of chametz in it. If it mixes in the whole food on Pesach, then the whole food becomes prohibited to eat. So a person should not use benchers that have crumbs in them on Pesach. The main reason he cleans all the books, because he's not going to use those books to eat, is because he combines all crumbs together. Maybe there's crumbs left there from even from previous year, so he has the boys clean all the books on the outside, to skim through the book on the inside, make sure there's no crumbs, like in a bencher, which is unbelievable. Like what a stringency. So Chazon Ish is very stringent about a few things, but when it comes to cosmetics, he's lenient. And they quote Rav Moshe Feinstein as being stringent about this, and I spoke to people who asked Rav Moshe Feinstein directly, and they told me that he was lenient about this question as well, even though the books quote him otherwise. They say that, or he said that, since an alcoholic would drink it, if he brought it to a laboratory and isolated the alcohol, which, if it's made out of chametz, would be drinkable, so even though the product itself as is, a dog wouldn't eat it, but since an alcoholic would technically eat it if he would isolate the alcohol in a lab. So, I mean, that's what this person said, someone, one of these books say that, or Moshe Feinstein said. But I don't think he wrote that anywhere in his responsa. I think he's quoting him as if he'd heard him. But I heard the opposite from Moshe Feinstein, that he held to be lenient. And it's very, I don't know really of any major authority that holds that shampoo and all this stuff should be stringent about it. However, there are the kashrut agencies, for the most part, will tell you that you can't use these cosmetic products on Pesach because of this issue of potential, what's known as akshavei, that you might give importance to the chametz that's mixed in, potentially possible to do so. So therefore, you could call benefiting from chametz. But the other opinion says it's not called benefiting chametz because since it's not edible as it is now to a dog, therefore it's not considered to be chametz at all, and therefore you could benefit from it. And that's my custom. But point is, that's what this woman was worried about. Should I be stringent? So what I explained to her was, and so I said on Shabbos, is that Pesach is a very complicated holiday. There's a lot to do. And my feeling is that a person should keep halacha. It's very important to keep halacha. And at the same time, it's important not to do too much, things that you don't have to do, because if you focus on things you don't have to do, you're going to end up not doing the things you do have to do. Because a person could only do so much. There's only a limit to a person's ability to keep Torah. I mean, you can't do everything. You're not going to learn the entire Shas in one day. It's not going to happen, right? So don't try to do it. Don't try to overextend yourself, because what ends up happening inevitably is that you're going to violate something because you're trying to do all these stringencies. So what I explained to her was, I believe God's will is that you should keep the Torah and keep halacha, but not stringencies, because we can't do everything. And so I told her that I think it's perfectly acceptable, because the opinion of most poskim is that you could use cosmetics on Pesach, and it's not a problem because it's not edible, and therefore enjoy your shampoos and your face creams and give other people facials with it. It's okay. It's not called benefiting from chametz, even though it's made out of oats. So that's sort of the purpose of this class is to try to focus on what we have to do and try to separate that from what we don't have to do and our stringencies that are brought down in some of these Pesach books and some of these websites. Yes? Yeah, I will. So the first thing that we're going to speak about is preparing for cleaning for Pesach. And that also takes the form of bedikas chametz, checking for chametz, which is done this year on Sunday night. Sunday night, right after nightfall, which is approximately 8 o'clock-ish.
Okay, I have a question. So yeah. If you're leaving to go away Sunday afternoon or late Sunday afternoon, is it better to do it Sunday afternoon or do it the previous night?
It's better to do it Saturday night.
Saturday night after.
Better supposed to do it at night. And
right?
Really doesn't make so much sense. Why? But that's what the halakha says.
Right.
The reasoning is because in those days, they used a candle.
Right.
And they felt that using a candle was better than using sunlight. And it actually equates, if you have skylights in your house, then that's just as good as at night. So for us, it's not just that, it's much better. We have lights. Lights are so much better than skylights. So logically, it would seem that it wouldn't make a difference if you do it in day or night. But since the halacha says at night, that's the takana of Chazal. The Chazal made a takana. We're trying to keep their rule. And their rule is to do it at night. However, you should use the lights in your house and not use a candle. You should start off with a candle, because that was the original injunction, to use a candle. But just do it for the first, make a bracha, use the candle for the first 30 seconds, a minute and a half, and then turn on all the lights in your house and use a flashlight. And don't use a candle in the closets, because you don't want to set your house on fire. And it's funny, but it's not funny, because people, it has, you burn your chumets, yeah, you burn your chumets and everything else too.
Price you pay for mitzvot.
Yeah. But there have been fires started by Medikas Chametz, and it's not a joke. So one should not put their lives in danger for Medikas Chametz, and there's no reason to. You should use a flashlight in your closets and use regular light for the rest of your house. And the question is, what do you have to check?
Does the takana spread to like the spoon and the feather, or is that also pick it up with a dustbuster and empty it out?
Yeah, that is not the same as a candle. Okay. That's not. You don't have to use a feather, and you do not have to use a spoon.
I just know a lot of people do it.
Yeah, it was a custom to do that, but that's not really a custom, a rule of a custom, and that's not required at all. So you don't have to use that at all. It's just a candle is part of the takana. So similar to halakhas neiros, one of the reasons for halakhas neiros is that you should have light in your house. That's not really done today. You don't really use the candles to light your house up. You use lights. So you don't realize when you make a bracha on candles, it's only for making ambiance, making it. But the second reason is your lights in your house. So it's perfectly legitimate if you don't have candles to use it to make a bracha on the lights in your house. And really, the point you should have in mind when you light the candles on Shabbos, that you're also making a bracha on the lights in your house, because that's really what the candles were originally intended for, lighting up your house. So you shouldn't bump into people. Shalom bias, So same thing here. The takana was made on a candle, so you should use the candle, but technically you don't need it anymore, so you should really use the lights in your house much better than a candle. Anyway. So it should be done immediately after nightfall. The Bach actually holds that it's a mitzvah overis, which means that the rabbis made it that since it was such a serious thing, they don't want you to forget it, that the mitzvah starts at nightfall. And every minute that you don't do it, you're violating a rabbinical commandment. That's what he says. Now, I'm not saying that you are. You don't do it, but that's the spirit in which the rule was made, so you don't forget it. You should do it immediately. You should be ready immediately afterwards. As a matter of fact, the halakha says that before nightfall, you should not like eat a meal. You shouldn't engage in other activities because you might forget. But they didn't want you to forget that. So it's kind of serious if you could start right away. Now, the thing about Bedikas Chametz, which is really where I want to get the spirit of the law thing that I spoke about before, is that it shouldn't take that long. If you prepare before, in my opinion, it shouldn't take more than a half an hour to do Bedikas Chametz. I remember when I was in yeshiva, there's some rabbis who used to say, if it takes you any less than 5 hours to Bedikas Chametz, you're not doing it right. And I say exactly the opposite. If it takes you any more than an hour, then something's wrong. And I'll explain to you why. Because really, there's only, what I said on Shabbos is I divided the house into two parts. There's a kitchen and there's the rest of the house. There's two different obligations. The reason is because, according to the Chazon Ish, we have a problem. You need to get all the crumbs in your whole house. If you don't hold like the Chazon Ish, which most poskim don't hold the Chazon Ish, crumbs are not an issue in the rest of your house. The only place there might be an issue is in your kitchen. Why? Because since there's a rabbinical restriction against eating crumbs that are mixed into your food, even one crumb that's mixed into your food, cooked food, then the whole food becomes prohibited rabbinically. So crumbs in your kitchen could potentially cause your food to be chametz crumbs, from the five grains, could potentially cause your food to become prohibited. So we want to be extra careful in the kitchen when we cook. The refrigerator also, even though we don't cook in the refrigerator, because food comes out of the refrigerator and it's cooked on your stove. So what I tell my cleaning lady when she comes over I tell her this, and this is funny. I told other people who have the same cleaning, like Gracie. Yeah. I told Bethany. So Gracie knows crumbs in the kitchen. Crumbs in the kitchen. Like, she has this thing. I know you're not supposed to have any crumbs in the kitchen. That's her thing. So, because it's a good thing to tell her, because that way she knows what our obligation is, what we have to get rid of. So the easiest way to get crumbs in the, get rid of crumbs in the kitchen is not necessarily the dust buster, but the easiest way is with astringent cleaner. It's a good invention, like bleach or Fantastic or something like that has that's poisonous. And the reason is because if you clean the areas in your kitchen with this Fantastic, if there are crumbs, they'll become inedible. So hopefully they won't fall into your food. But the point is that if they would, A, that will protect you because you're going to make sure they don't fall in your food. But all the more so, if they do fall in your food, then it's not edible. So therefore won't do anything to your food anyway. So to me, this is the best invention. It's a great thing. It's basically, you take Fantastic, you spray your whole kitchen, whatever areas, the counters, the closets, the stovetop, the refrigerator, and whatever freezer space you could do that. And that's it. That's basically, you've done what you have to do in terms of koshering, in terms of crumbs, and your floor if you want it, just in case, you know, if something falls on the floor, you want to eat something for 2 second rule, whatever, 5 second rule, right? So that way, if it crumbs on your floor, also, your whole kitchen is basically koshered from crumbs if you use astringent cleaner. That shouldn't take that long. That's the thing that's the most time-consuming thing that you're going to do in your kitchen.
That's the most time-consuming is bringing down everything the basement and bringing up all the other things.
Well, you don't have to do that either. You can just close the closet if you want.
Yeah, if you have enough room in your closet.
Right, right, that's true. But technically, you could just close up the closet with chametz in it and just write chametz on it and sell the chametz in your house. I mean, you don't have to do anything else. But that's true. If you have to remove it, that should be the most time-consuming thing. Fine. That's moving stuff around as opposed to koshering stuff.
Right.
Then, basically, so that's in terms of bedikas chametz. The kitchen area is what you have to be worried about is crumbs. And you should be looking for that when you do bedikas chametz. But it's a good idea to prepare beforehand because that way the bedika will take less time. And, you know, checking twice is always a good thing to do because, you know, this is something that's not an easy thing to necessarily be on top of 100%. So if you do twice, you'd be more ensured that everything's done properly. Then, the rest of your house, crumbs are not the issue because we don't have to worry about eating crumbs the rest of your house. The only thing that's worrisome is known as gluska yuffa. Gluska yuffa means a food that's sizable enough to eat, which is like, I would say, like a Cheerio. Like a Cheerio in your bedroom is something that you should get rid of. Or a Twix bar, or, you know, any of these chametz, edible chametz items, not crumbs, but they're big enough that a person would say, oh, look, a Cheerio. 6-month-old Cheerio, let me throw it in my mouth. Right? So that's something that, if it's edible, that you should get rid of in your house. But the only thing you have to look for in the rest of your house is if it's feasible that this chametz there. In halachic terminology, makom shemachnisim bo chametz, the place you bring chametz into. So if your bedroom is a place that you never would eat, then you don't have to check your bedroom. If your attic is a place you never eat, you don't have to check your attic. If your bathroom, you don't munch in the bathroom or anything, so you don't have to check your bathroom, right? And we just explained you don't have to check your toiletries. So basically, there's no reason to check a bathroom if you don't eat in your bathroom, unless there's some reason to believe that you have chametz there. Your clothing, the Rama says, you should check that. Not bedika, but you should make sure that there's no chametz in your clothing. So if you're a type of person that stashes away, Snickers, or whatever, Twix bars, or not Snickers, because I don't even know if that's chametz. But chametz, by the way, when I say chametz, it's the 5 grains. Wheat, spelt, oats, barley, and rye. Those 5 grains. That's what you're obligated to get rid of in a Pesach. And we'll get to other foods, kidney and things like that. But if you're a person that stashes away stuff in your pockets, for whatever reason, then you have to look in your pockets. If you're not, then you don't have to look in your pockets. If you don't have any reason to suspect you have anything in your closets or your drawers, then fine. You know, most people don't eat cookies and stash them away in their sock drawers. So there's no reason to check your sock drawers. And people go crazy checking the drawers and vacuuming. There's no reason to do that unless you have any reason to believe that you have chametz in there that you would eat.
So car
also, since it's not a house, so the Mishnas Yaakov says there's no obligation to do bedika on it. But you still have to make sure, since you own it, that there's no chametz there that you would eat. So crumbs are not an issue in a car. So Rav Hyman says that if it's under the seat, you don't have to worry, because it's like the, in the case of the halacha, where a wall fell on it. You know, if a wall falls on chametz, you don't have to check for there, because you're not going to get it. It's not going to be a place, you're not going to pick up the bricks in the wall to take to eat the Cheerio, right? So same thing, you're not going to say, oh, let's see what's back underneath the seat and pull out some food. It's not going to happen. So it's only if it's like visible food in your car, and I got a lot of that. Ellen can testify to that, right?
You got little kids, you're going to do that
kind of thing. Well, yeah, we don't have that, but yeah, that's true. Kids would have, if you have kids, you know, then that's going to be an issue.
The rabbi has mice in his car, actually.
That's very possible. So you only have to look in your car, in your trunk, in your car, for food that's edible, that's chametz, and get rid of that. And you don't need to go, like people have like these special car washes for Pesach, they have special Pesach package. You know, they double the price. Yeah, in Muncie, when I was in Muncie, they had the car washes, and they all knew that the people for Pesach, they loved it, it's a boom. They have the whole lines of cars for Pesach. So then they said, this is a great idea, they said Pesach package. And what's a Pesach package? Basically, it takes them, you know, 2 hours to vacuum every inch of your car, and they take everything out and whatever, and they charge like $200. Great idea for them.
I remember in Baltimore, this guy was like literally taking the seats out of his van.
Exactly.
And like all the doors were open, and him and his kids were like taking the car apart. You would have thought they were like rebuilding the whole engine
exactly.
or something.
That's the joke I said about.
I saw them doing it.
In Bnei Brak, the joke, and this, I think, I was told this really happened. This family, basically, their toilet broke every Pesach. So they called the plumber, and the plumber says, you need to replace your toilet. So they basically called Home Depot, local, whatever it is, in Israel, local Home Depot, to get a new toilet on Erev Pesach. And in the meantime, the toilet was useless. So they took the toilet and put it on the curb, and everyone else looked out the window and said, oh my God, I forgot to check my toilet. So the whole community starts bringing the toilet out to the curb, because they have to make sure that the toilet does not come into it. Right? So that's totally not necessary to do. All you have to do is make sure there's no edible chametz in your car. And that shouldn't take so long. How much long should that take? I mean, my car, it's going to take me half an hour. It's because I got food everywhere. But basically, for a normal person, you know, you don't have to really have to look that hard in your car. You don't have to look that hard in your bedroom or your bathroom, if at all. Or any area of your house besides your kitchen. So that's in terms of bedikah and preparing for bedikah. That's all that's obligated. Then you have to kosher your utensils. That should be done before the obligation for chametz comes, which is this year's Monday, about 12-ish. 11-ish, 12-ish, something like the fifth hour. It's almost 12 o'clock, like 11 something, I
Wait,
think.
You can take your chametz utensils and kosher them for Pesach?
Of course. Yeah, sure you can do that. So, I mean, you have to do that with your, if you're going to use your oven or your microwave or your, you know, whatever, you know, whatever else, whatever the appliances you're going to use. I don't recommend a toaster oven because that's very hard to kosher. But microwave is easy because most microwaves, Rav Hyman used to test them, and he said most microwaves don't get hot enough on the sides to transfer chametz to. So therefore, all you got to do is just clean it. And if you clean it with a astringent cleaner, that's even better. And then I tested the glass at the bottom of the microwave. That always gets hot. So that is something that is, you know, could be looked at as chametz. So you should, what I do is I just cover it twice with saran wrap, and that means there's two layers between the food and the glass bottom. And that's enough to prevent any transfer of chametz from the glass bottom to your food, because we say that two utensils, so to speak, which we consider each layer of saran wrap as a utensil, will prevent transfer from the glass bottom to the food. So if you just basically, all you got to do is clean out the inside of your microwave from any food and use an astringent cleaner to do so, just to make sure, and then cover the glass with saran wrap, and voila, your microwave's done in basically 2 minutes or less. Then your oven, all you've got to do is either put it through a self-cleaning cycle. If you don't have that, just turn on the highest temperature for about a half an hour. And self-cleaning, you don't have to do the whole cycle. You can just do it half an hour. If you want it, it's fine. Just make sure there's no edible food in the oven before you kosher it. And it's better if you can wait 24 hours since the last use. And then just turn it on for half an hour, and then it's kosher for Pesach. And then the burners on top of the stove, you can put in the oven when this gets kosher as well. Or just keep it on the stove with the fire burning for 5 minutes, or turn it upside down on the fire to kosher. So those are all options for the burner on the top of the stove. And then the other option, then the other thing which is advisable to do if possible, is to cover the top of your stove with heavy-duty aluminum foil, turn on the burners for like a few minutes, you know, maybe 5 minutes. Gets the whole top of the stove hot, and that will kosher, and you should clean it before you do that. And if you don't want to burn your house down, if you think that might burn your house down, then that's fine. You don't have to do that. You can just clean it with a stringent cleaner, same thing. And you don't have to cover or anything like that, because basically you don't cook on your stove top. You just cook on the stove, on the burners itself. And only the thing we really have to worry about is what you cook, specifically cook, like an oven, microwave, where you cook food into. But the secondary things, there are many opinions that say they don't transfer at all to those things. If you use a stringent cleaner, that will get rid of any tastes inside. And you know, the assumption is that it's going to be more than 24 hours anyway, so any taste that's inside is what we call nosing tam afgan, which is spoiled. And even though on Pesach there's a stringency about nosing tam afgan, spoiled taste, but that some say that only applies to food. It seems like from the Shulchan Aruch it only applies to food. It doesn't apply to utensils. That means that after 24 hours, any utensil that's nosing tam afgan that has chametz in it and then becomes spoiled in the utensil because the 24-hour rule will not affect any food on Pesach to become chametz. And on top of it, if you use a stringent cleaner, then that will totally obliterate any taste inside. And therefore, we could rely on that as enough to clean the stovetop and the countertops and anything else where food might go to. And like I said, basically, you know, 100 years ago, they didn't have, like, aluminum foil. They didn't have these Home Depot locations where you could buy countertop covers. They, you know, they just did what they could about the counters. And they didn't have these covers and things like that on Pesach. It's not necessary. You know, like that joke I saw on Facebook with that car that's completely covered in aluminum foil and it says, like, I don't want to make you jealous, but my car's ready for Pesach. You know, you don't have to do that. I remember when I was praying for Pesach, I used to follow these books. And my whole kitchen looked like a rocket ship. So, yeah.
That's why I used to cover everything with foil.
So it's not necessary to do that. The only thing you should look for are like places where there might be food, like your range, you know, above your cooktop. You should just clean that well, and you know, with a stringent cleaner, and clean your stovetop with stringent cleaner. Just clean everything. Bleach out your kitchen, basically, you know what I'm saying? So that it just obliterates any taste that's in the counters or places where you might put food.
What about coffee makers? Do you have to do anything?
So it depends. I mean, if you don't use the coffee maker for chametz, then there's no reason why it's not.
Just use it for coffee.
Yeah, so I'm
water
saying.
And coffee.
So
you don't have to do anything special.
No, I don't think you have to do anything for that because it hasn't been turned to chametz.
Right.
So anything like that that hasn't been used for chametz is permissible to use on Pesach. Hot water urns or anything like that. Some people are worried about steam, but my feeling is that steam never gets hot enough by the spout to transfer chametz to it. So if a person wants to be careful, then if that situation, if there's a worry that maybe chametz transfer, just always use fantastic a little bit, just wipe it down wherever you're worried about, and then basically that's just like an extra protection against the possibility of having chametz there, that it wouldn't transfer to any food that you use on Pesach.
Why is there such a concern anyway about the surfaces and stovetop if most are cliché-y?
Is that what I'm saying?
So, but why? You don't even really need to bleach it then. I mean, it's like, I know it's in common gum, and a cliché-y is like really nothing.
Well, there are some that say that if it's yassel lettuce bow, Ramal brings two opinions. Right. And he says if it's hot enough to be like 100, depends, 120 to 150, 180 right. degrees, depending on what you say. But the amount of yassel lettuce bow is where you put your hand away. So that is enough to transfer top.
Even from a cliché-y,
yeah. So therefore, even though the Gemara says cliché-y ain't a boleya, cliché-y does not transfer taste, and that's the Shulchan Aruch passing that way. The Ramah says, yeshon, some say And that's why all the books will tell you that's the halacha. But that's not necessarily the halacha. That's each omer. There's some that hold that way. So it's a suffix whether that's the halacha. And it would seem it's a chumrah. And the Meikar HaDin, that's not the halacha. It would seem to be. The Ramah said that really he brings a lot of opinions to give respect to those opinions, but he doesn't mean he holds that way. So, but you know, because that opinion is brought down, so we treat it with some credence. So the bleach really will just, you know, make things better, you know, according to that opinion.
What about the whole thing of steam or cold water in the microwave?
So, like I said, the reason why that's not necessary usually is because the sides of the microwave don't get hot enough to transfer taste. So steaming the microwave is not a bad thing to do. It's not necessary to do it. And it won't help the glass. Because the glass, I mean, it could help the glass, technically. But the glass, basically, there's three-way opinion about glass. One is that it's like kli cheres, which means it's like earthenware, which means you can't kosher it anyway. Second opinion is like metal, which it can be koshered, which the steam would help for. Third opinion is that it doesn't receive taste at all, which means you don't need to do it according to that opinion also. So that's what I'm saying. The easiest thing to do is just saran wrap the whole thing. And that way, even if you hold this like a kli cheres and it can't be kashered, then you don't have to worry about the taste going through. But, you know, it's not. If you steam out your oven, then, I think you can rely on that as enough to clean the glass also. It's probably better just to saran wrap if you can. I didn't mention a dishwasher. So a dishwasher, technically speaking, you could also kasher that. But that you really should only do that if you really need it, because dishwasher is like a controversial utensil appliance, I mean, in a kitchen. But the truth is that if you use soap to kosher it, and you do it, let's say, three times, then there's those who are reliant to say it's kosher for Pesach. There's no food. If you inspect it, there's no food, and you run it, then you run it three times. Clean up all food, run it three times. Then, if you need it for Pesach, you can do that as well, as long as it's inspected and it's clean. Because that will basically do a similar type of thing. It will put soap in the whole dishwasher. And even if it's plastic, because there are many opinions that hold that plastic is, you could kosher plastic. So, we can rely on those opinions. So I always tell people that if they move into an apartment and they don't want to buy a new, let's say a renting apartment, they want to buy a new dishwasher, it's expensive for them, then they could just kosher their dishwasher that way. If there's some sort of financial loss. So if this is like something that's important to a person that needs a dishwasher, they can kosher the dishwasher that way for Pesach. And the refrigerator, basically just put, you could keep chametz in the refrigerator, just put it into bags and tie the bags and write on it chametz so that people know not to eat it. And make a separation so that it's clear that no one eats that stuff. And just sell it. And then just same thing with your cabinets. If you have food chametz in your cabinets, just tape up the cabinets so that people know not to eat the food in the cabinets. And then you could just separate chametz from not chametz that way, either in the fridge or in the kitchen. And, basically just wipe down your refrigerator if you can with a astringent cleaner to get all the crumbs out of it not be an issue. And like I said, separate the chametz and then in the freezer as well. And the freezer could be a problem if it's frost and stuff like that, so just do the best you can. You don't have to get every inch of the freezer. Just make sure, just inspect it, make sure there's no crumbs or chametz and try to wipe everything off. But basically, you could just separate the chametz from the chametz that way. And that's it. It shouldn't take more than an hour. If it takes more than an hour, some issue. I'm not sure what the issue would be, but something's going on to clean your kitchen. And then the rest of your house also shouldn't take that long because you're just looking for chametz that's edible. So that's basically in terms of preparing your house for bedikah and for doing bedikah. That's and for koshering your appliances. That's basically what's necessary to do. Yeah.
Need to do anything more for the kitchen sink?
So the kitchen sink, I don't think it's necessary to do more. The only reason, again, is because the sink might have been used for very hot food, or because it's just the sink's force it gets hot, but you don't cook in your sink either. So therefore, if you use astringent cleaner in your sink, it's enough. If you want to kosher your sink with like boiling hot water, so fine. I mean, that's a good thing to do. It's not bad to do it. I don't recommend doing it on the counters, though, because then you get your whole sink, your kitchen soaking wet. But in the sink, it's not so bad because it goes down the drain anyway. So if you wanted to use the hot water, you could do that. Just clean it well and pour hot water on it, or just clean it well with Fantastic, and that's enough water, even if you don't pour water on it, because of the taste goes in to the sink.
Well, this might be a silly question, but if you're using the flow spray wrap, you need to get new
boxes
of them.
Say that again? Oh, yeah, so it's not silly at all. A lot of people ask me that because they don't know if they can just use stuff on Fantastic at all. So the only criteria is just if you are confident there's no chametz in the product that you use during the year, like saran wrap, chances are you didn't pour crumbs into the saran wrap. So you can just inspect it. If there's no crumbs there, then you could assume that there's no problem to use the saran wrap. There's no reason to assume that there's chametz in your saran wrap unless you have reason to believe so. And same thing with food. If you open food, people ask me spices. I don't think a person needs to buy new spices for Pesach. That's expensive. And it's not necessary. I mean, I used to do that, and I still have spices from like 7 years ago in my bag. You know, it's like crazy. How many onion powders do you need? I mean, every year you got to buy new onion powder. It's not necessary to do that unless there's a reason for you to believe that the chametz got into your spices. And that applies to all food. You know, people ask me about a lot of different foods and non-foods, and the answer basically is you have to use your brain and say, is there chametz in here? Is there a reason for you to worry that it's chametz? And you can even inspect it most of the time and see. If you don't see chametz, then you can use it for Pesach. It's not a problem. So toothpaste is not food. So toothpaste, you don't need to buy new toothpaste, and you don't need to get a new toothbrush. For the toothbrush, you just inspect it, make sure there's no crumbs in your toothbrush. I mean, whoever has crumbs in toothbrush, you better go to a dentist. But basically, if you do have crumbs in dentist toothbrush, then wash it out. If you don't, then it's kosher Pesach. The only reason anything would transfer to the toothbrush is if you eat food, brush your teeth over some fire, and burn your teeth with the toothbrush on it. Because the only way anything can transfer to the brush is if it gets over 150 degrees or something. So potentially, possibly, it's still not a clean rishon. So what I'm trying to say, I mean sarcastic, basically there's no way that taste could transfer to your toothbrush. And therefore you don't need to buy new toothbrushes. Same thing with toothbrushes. I mean, people have like the cases of toothbrushes that they buy for Pesach. I mean, the toothbrush companies love Pesach. They get like, people buy like so many of them just in case someone comes as a guest. They buy like 20 toothbrushes and they pile up and no one uses them. There's no reason to get a new toothbrush or toothpaste for Pesach, even though you're putting them out. Or lipstick, or chapstick, unless there's crumbs in your chapstick. I don't know why there would be. If there is, then you should not be eating crumbs in your chapstick. But most people don't have that issue. So therefore, the chametz doesn't transfer to the chapstick or the lipstick. So you don't have to worry about any of these products, even if you put them in your mouth, unless there's a reason you believe this chametz, actually edible chametz that's going to be somehow attached to this product you're using, and if you put it in your mouth, that you should not do. But most people, most of the time, don't have that issue.
What about vitamins, mineral supplements, medicine that's not headache medicine, that if there's any chametz in that, are you allowed to eat it?
So my feeling is the same thing, that since it's not food, it's permissible. Now some say vitamins are food, because vitamins are give nutrients. Moshe Feinstein held that way. But many people say, well, it's not food, because it's a pill. Pill's not food.
What about medicines that, like, sometimes they put things in for flavor? Children's cough syrup or something like that. They literally put things in for flavor.
That's a good point. That is considered food. Make a bracha on that.
Okay.
Because it tastes good.
But well, it doesn't necessarily taste good. They're trying to make it taste good.
But it doesn't taste like medicine. It tastes like cherry.
Okay.
However, most of these, I haven't seen any of these things that have real chametz in it.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I've been looking.
The only issue if it has like 5-grain.
Yeah, I don't buy children's cough syrup. So
yeah. So basically, if it has, let's say there's alcohol from 5 grains, and that's something they probably should not eat on Pesach. But like I said, I've never seen that. I've never seen.
Ushkach in general, though.
What do you mean? Doesn't ushkach.
Okay, even though it's in there for flavor.
Yeah, I mean, it's the ingredients. You have to read the ingredients.
Okay.
If the ingredients are kosher.
But you're treating it like any other food then?
Like any other food.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like a food because it tastes good.
Okay.
But But again, it's not, it's really the edible part of the food. So like if the inedible part has treif in it, then it, that might not be an issue. But most of the time I haven't seen this to be an issue.
But it's like a capsule, like
glycerin,
the capsule or anything like that, but that's not relevant because that's just holding it together. It's not food.
It's not food, it's like a pill.
Pills, well, it's a pill, food. I'm saying, like if whatever makes up the shell.
Exactly, it's a pill, it's not food. Now, like I said, Rav Moshe holds it's like vitamins, like food. But I still would only treat a vitamin like food if it's edible vitamin. Same thing. If it's like Flintstones, so then I would check the ingredients out and make sure it's not chametz. But if it's, I haven't seen really pills anyway being chametz. I don't think there's pills that are like aspirin. These things don't have oats in them or wheat in them.
I bought once, 1 year, I know I still have it. The kosher vitamin company was selling kosher for Passover,
Tums.
No, not Tums.
That's a
famous They did have that for Tums. Calcium. They had that also, but no. And they did have a kosher for Passover calcium, but they also had for headache medicine,
It's not necessary.
Some kind of version of Advil or something.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, because they make money off it. It's very good for them.
Yeah.
They convince people that you can't have it, and then they make money, which is, I find that to be dishonest. I mean, basically, they're telling you something that's not true, which is that you can't have aspirin on Pesach unless it has a hechsher, which is not true. So pills do not need a hechsher unless it's edible. And vitamins, I don't think they need a hechsher either. And I actually treat vitamins only as food with regard to Shabbos. With regard to kashrus, I think it's like a pill. It's not food. And therefore, it wouldn't become its issue. But Shabbos, since there's a gzeira against medicine on Shabbos, which means pills, so generally speaking, you shouldn't take a pill on Shabbos unless you're nafal mishkov, you're sick enough that you need to lie in bed to get yourself, make yourself feel better. So if you have a headache, you're allowed to take medicine on Shabbos, but if you are just taking medicine, I don't know, if it's prescription medicine, so Shlomo Kluger, there are those who say that it's permissible also because it's only a situation where you're, it comes suddenly, but if something you're prepared before Shabbos, take medication every day. So it's better if you take it once a day, to take it before Shabbos and then after Shabbos, because then it's 24 hours. But if you need to take it multiple times a day, if it's prescription medication, then you could take it on Shabbos because of this with Shlomo Kluger. And also I rely on Rav Moshe Feinstein to say that vitamins are food, to be permissible to take vitamins on Shabbos also. And the reason is because this, as most people recognize, this gzera of Chazal, of not taking medicine, is because maybe you're going to go and you're going to grind up medication on Shabbos, and that's violating the Isser of Tochein, of grinding on Shabbos. That's something that's pretty far-fetched, but that doesn't mean we don't have to keep the gzera. You still have to keep the gzera, because this is one of those injunctions that the rabbis made, that the reason doesn't matter, just that's the reason, you can't take medication, that's it. So you have to listen to that. However, if there's a leniency in a rabbinical injunction that's possible to use, then I rely on that leniency. So the Shlomo Kluger is one of them, which is the prescription medication, which you're taking every day anyway. You can take it multiple times. If you take it multiple times a day, then you can take it on Shabbos. And I rely on the fact that it's like food, according to Rav Moshe, to be able to take vitamins on Shabbos also. But generally speaking, it's obvious that vitamins are not food. Vitamins are like pills, right? Even though they give you nutrients in your body, it's still not considered food, and therefore it's not subject to the laws of Chametz on Pesach. So I think that covers just about everything. Is there any questions beyond that regarding checking your house and preparing your house for B'dikas Chametz and for checking your house for B'dikas Chametz? Yeah.
Yeah, in the example where you have to check like the day before, the night before, because this might be too busy or traveling or whatever.
Yeah.
Would you say the bracha the night before?
No, you don't say the bracha.
Okay.
If you do it on the right, sorry, I didn't mention that. You don't say it. You say the bittel, you revatel the chametz, but you don't say the bracha unless you do it the right time, the time that Chazal said, which would be Sunday night. Mm. If you don't do it Sunday night, then you don't say a bracha.
Oh,
I'm sorry
okay.
I mentioned that. Thank you for pointing that out. And the bittel needs to be done. Really, the bittel should be done also at the right time, which is Sunday night and then Monday morning, because you don't want to be involved in chametz, you know, to nullify your chametz until you can't eat anymore.
So
basically,
what do I have to do? Take my chametz with me to Chicago?
No, you don't have to. But you know, at the same time, if you do eat chametz for breakfast before the time comes that you don't eat chametz anymore, then you should flush it down the toilet or something, or burn it, or whatever you want to
wherever
do.
Wherever I am.
Wherever you are.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the right thing to do. And then, but either way, you should do the bittul on Monday morning. That's in the Siddur. And the bittul, by the way, the bittul is nullifying your chametz. You have to read it in a language you understand. So if you understand the Aramaic, you have to read the English, because you have to understand, you can't nullify something if you don't know what you're saying. You can't say chametz is nullified in French if you don't know what that means. So same thing in Hebrew and Aramaic, doesn't help. It's not like a prayer that works, even if you don't understand it. Nullifying chametz must be done in a way that you understand what you're saying. I hereby nullify this chametz, even if that's not in my possession, it's in my possession, that I know about. I don't know about any chametz that's around, whatever, is now nullified. So that has to be said in a language you understand. So read it in the English if you don't understand the Aramaic.
You're supposed to burn if you don't have anything to burn.
You don't have to burn it. It's not an obligation. The obligation is a check. Even though the bracha is, I'll be your chametz, to get rid of your chametz, but that means that your obligation is to get rid of chametz in your possession. If you check and there's no chametz, so great, you did it. You got rid of chametz in your possession. So you don't have an obligation to burn anything. If you find chametz, then you don't have to burn it then. You really have to get rid of it, which means flush down the toilet is okay. I mean, it's better to burn it because there are opinions that say it's better to do that. But if you are causing a fire hazard and you know a way to burn it, then you don't have to burn your chametz. You just have to flush down the toilet. And this should be done, on Monday morning.
So I'm just talking, if your house is completely clean, you're supposed to put out a few crumbs so that you don't say the prayer.
No, you don't have to do
you
that.
You don't have to do
you
that.
You don't have to do that. No.
So when you say that...
It's better not to do that, in my opinion. That causes a problem. Putting out 10 pieces. You don't have to do that. I don't think you should. I mean, that's a custom some people have.
Yeah.
But it's not necessary to do, and it's probably better not to do it, because what ends up happening is, as the case of Shulchan Aruch is brought down, they might forget it, might lose a piece. And it's not obligated. Unless you have a strong custom in your family to do it, you don't have to do it. You shouldn't do it, I don't think. What do you think?
So when you said about the Biur
Chametz? Biur Chametz is done when, right before you check. It says, I'll Biur Chametz. It's the checking.
And the nullification thing?
Nullification thing is saying right after you check.
So what are you supposed to say in the morning?
In the morning you say the nullification again. But the nullification language is different in the morning. Because at night you say, well, I nullify everything I don't know about. And then in the morning you say, even if I do know about, because in the morning you're nullifying everything, and at night you're only nullifying what you don't know about, but what you do know about you're keeping for the next morning. So you're not nullifying that yet, because you want to burn it. So the next morning is the real nullification. You're basically saying, I'm nullifying everything. And that's it. You should only do that before you, when you finished with chametz. Like you're not eating breakfast anymore. You finish breakfast, you're not eating chametz, you're done with chametz, then you say the beer. Which is, you know, the latest time for that. I'll be putting in the email. It's probably around 10 o'clock or something. 10 something. Anyway, okay, so I think that's...
So you do it in the hour window, right?
You do it...
That's what I'm saying. You do the bitzel when you do the biur, which is in the fifth hour.
Right.
Fifth hour. Yeah, because they pushed everything up an hour. They pushed everything up an hour. Because all...
Right, well, the food's going to, I guess, by 11... But because you can eat chametz until 10 something, I think.
Right, that's fourth hour.
By the fourth hour.
Right.
And by the fifth hour is when you have to get rid of your chametz. And that's when the bittul needs to be said by. So it's 11 something. I say 10. It's 11 something, I guess, would be the time that you have to do the bittul by. And that's when you're done with everything, like double chametz. Okay.
Did you say about the pet food?
Oh, well, yeah, so then the products. So we'll get to buying products. So basically, people ask me all the time, and you know, a lot of people know what I hold about this, but basically people ask me all the time about buying products on Pesach, and my feeling is that if a person is not lazy is a bad word to use, they don't trust themselves, they don't want to rely on doing their own research, then they should only buy food with a hechsher that's kosher of Pesach. But if a person is okay with relying on themselves, which person really should be, it's okay to check for ingredients, even if someone doesn't have a hechsher of Pesach, even not a hechsher at all. Someone just asked me about Skittles, I looked for ingredients, and I was basically acting as a special pest. I don't have a hechsher. But a person has to know every ingredient that they look for in the products. Basically, what you're looking for is anything from the five grains. If it has wheat, spelt, oats, barley, or rye, that is chametz. You cannot use that on Pesach, even if it's a small, it's a minor ingredient. Because anything more than 1.6% is not permissible to use on pay to eat or have in your possession on Pesach. Yeah.
How do you know that when you have the
So the reason we know that is because there are FDA laws, and anything that's not listed on the ingredients cannot be in the product unless it's less than 1% of the product. If it's less than 1% of the product, which basically means a minute amount, much less than 1%, then it's nullified. And even though the hechsher won't give a hechsher on a product if it's nullified, and that's why they won't give a hechsher on a product that is not specifically kosher or Pesach, that's not been kosher, like the utensils haven't been kosher and stuff like that. A consumer doesn't have the same restriction as a kosher company, because the kosher company is saying in advance that this is kosher Pesach. But a consumer buys the product after it's already produced. And that, the restriction is much less. It's produced by non-Jews for other non-Jews. And therefore, there's no restriction on them to produce something that's with something nullified in it. So if it falls in on Pesach, the crumb falls in on Pesach, so then it's you can't eat it. But 99% of products you're going to buy on Pesach are made before Pesach, and if it falls in before Pesach, it's nullified. So therefore, we're not worried about specks, crumbs falling into products on Pesach. Before Pesach, because anything that's going to be nullified in 1 in 60, it's less than 1.66%, it's nullified. And that's why, by the way, we rely on like products that say may contain traces of shellfish. That doesn't affect the kosher status of the product, even though the hechsher won't give a hechsher on it, because it's not going to fall in. We're worried about like particles in the air, which is definitely less than 1%, and we're not concerned about it, because even if it did fall in, even if those particles went into the product, it's nullified. So one can rely on nullification as long as we know, or we're pretty sure, or we're not sure even that the product was made before Pesach. If the product, we know the product was, or pretty sure the product was made on Pesach, then one should not buy the product, because it's a good possibility. It's not a good possibility, but since it's possible that chametz, a speck of chametz went in, so we're stringent about it. It's better not to rely on that. But if you're pretty sure that it was made before Pesach, then you can rely on nullification if the ingredients don't have the five grains in it. But you have to make sure that every ingredient you check doesn't have five grains. Like sometimes it doesn't say wheat. It will say, I don't know, vinegar. Sometimes vinegar is made out of the five grains. You have to be sure that it's not made out of five grains. If it says alcohol, make sure it's not five grains. If it says, my experience, by the way, is most of these products are not made out of five grains. And if you have a product like that, the way you find out is by emailing the company. But my experience is most mouthwashes and things like that, the alcohol is not made out of five grains. Usually made out of corn or some other grain, but not wheat or one of the five grains. So that's in terms of the ingredients. So basically, the other thing about ingredients is that the kosher agencies, the kosher agencies, speak about kidney oat. So kidney oat is one of my pet peeves, because there's a few problems. First of all, the first thing I say is that you have to keep kidney oat. There's no question. Kidney oat is in Shulchan Aruch. It's a custom that's hundreds of years old. It says straight out in Shulchan Aruch that this custom, even though the custom itself is a chiddush, it's something that's normally not done. We don't usually add on to restrictions, because it takes a bezdin take on restrictions, but it's been an Ashkenazi custom for hundreds of years, so therefore one has an obligation to keep kidney oat. There are movements in Israel to say no more kidney oat, Ashkenazi don't have to keep kidney oat anymore. I don't think that's legitimate. You're not allowed to just get rid of a custom because you don't like it. This is a hundreds of years old custom, and even if the lodge doesn't apply anymore, there was no, a lot of things the lodge doesn't apply, you still got to do it. However, on the other hand, adding to the prohibition, in my opinion, is not only something that is undesirable. I don't think it's permissible. I don't think it's permissible to add on more than what the requirement was to begin with. So eating a bowl of rice on Pesach is totally not okay for an Ashkenazi. Eating a bowl of beans is not okay for an Ashkenazi. However, there are many things that people call kidney yolk nowadays that should not be in the category of kidney yolk. So for example, there are at least three things that I don't think should be included in kidney yolk because they didn't exist in the time in Europe in the time of the injunction. So that would be soy corn and peanuts. Soy corn and peanuts, in my opinion, are not kidney yolk. And the reason they're not kidney yolk is even though they're beans, right? Sort of. Corn is not really a bean, but the soy is, and peanuts are. But they did not exist in Europe at the time of the injunction. It's historically a fact. These things were not discovered until America, you know, in the Americas and not in Europe. And they only were brought to Europe in like the 1800s. And therefore, it could not have been part of the original injunction. And therefore, those food products are added on. Additionally, if a person doesn't want to rely on that, fine. But on top of that, you have most of these products, soy, corn, and the peanuts, are not just put into products as is. Peanuts maybe are, but soy and corn many times are added in as other products and derivatives. So the problem with that, like corn syrup. Corn syrup and soy lecithin is two examples. So soy lecithin and corn syrup, in my opinion, should not be in the category of kidney yolk, even if you do want to include them in kidney yolk, because they are, first of all, changed from the original form. And there are many opinions that say that if you take beans or rice and turn it into oil, rice oil or bean oil, that the oil is permissible in Pesach. That's first of all. Second of all, even according to the opinions that say that's not permissible, if it's completely changed, as known as a shtan lagamer, completely changed from its original form, that's permissible to use on Pesach, even if you drink it out of a bottle, corn syrup, you drink it straight out of a bottle, that's completely, I wouldn't recommend that health-wise, but or even taste-wise, because that's like kind of sweet. But it's completely changed from its original structure, and therefore it's permissible on Pesach. But all the more so if it's mixed into a product. And the reason is because the Rama says that if even on Pesach, if rice, for instance, falls into another, let's say falls into soup, and the rice soup mixture has 51% soup and 49% rice, then you're allowed to eat the soup and the rice together on Pesach. And the reason is because kidney yolk is just a custom. It's not, we say it's just a custom. It doesn't mean you can't keep it, like I said. You still have to keep it. But we're not stringent about mixtures. So if it by accident fell into the soup, or whatever you fell into, and it's not the majority food, the Rama says, it doesn't need 1/60th, just even the majority, then it's permissible to eat that soup on Pesach. It's not like chametz. You're just eating kidney yolk. So we say it's batel barov. It's batel in 1 and 2. As long as it's 51 to 49%. So if you have corn syrup that's mixed into soda or ice cream or yogurt, so first of all, corn should not be part of the injunction at all. Second of all, it's not original corn. It's not turned into, it's a derivative from corn. Third, it's not only derivative, it's completely changed from its original form to corn syrup in a laboratory. And fourth, which is I think the strongest argument, is that it's nullified in 50%, less than 50% of the product. So, and this is before Pesach is nullified. So in my opinion, there's no reason for a person to go crazy in these things. Now, if you live in Lakewood or Muncie or Brooklyn or any of these places where it's very easy to get kosher Pesach food, so fine. So then I think the right thing to do is to buy kosher Pesach food. But if you live in Center City where it's really annoying to try to find kosher Pesach soda, for instance, in my opinion, there's no reason to buy to not buy Coke and Sprite and Diet Coke and all these things, because the only issue is that it's kidney oil according to the kosher companies. And this is not called kidney oil. This is not called kidney oil because it's nullified in 50, it's less than 50% of the product, and it's completely changed from its original form. And it's not even kidney oil to begin with, because corn isn't even kidney oil. So in my opinion, it's perfectly okay to buy food that has corn syrup or soy lecithin, for instance, for example, as a minor ingredient, and that's if that's the only reason why the kosher agencies say you can't eat on Pesach. What are you going to say?
So
I would say that yes, that you could have soy milk, you could have peanut butter, right? But all the more so if it's just a minor ingredient. The reason soy milk is okay because soy really shouldn't be part of the gzera, and it's on top of it, it's turned into liquid. So you have two positive things in your favor. But if a person says, I don't want to do that, I understand that. But if it's soy lecithin, which is a minor ingredient in yogurt or ice cream, and that's the only issue, then that for sure you can rely on to eat that on Pesach.
Do you eat corn on the cob on Pesach?
I usually don't because it freaks people out. But yeah, I think it's okay.
I'm at the Seder here. I think give everyone corn on the cob. That's
it. It sort of freaks people out. I'm not saying this to freak people out. I'm just saying this because people should know that if they need it, they should use it. I don't need to eat corn on the cob, so I don't do it. But if I needed to have corn on the cob for whatever reason, then I think it's totally permissible to do so. I think it's okay.
No, I figured you would. I just think you should.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to freak people out because people like who see that is like, you know, they think I'm eating like bread. You know, they equate corn with bread and peanuts with bread. So I don't want to necessarily. I'm not looking to freak people out. I'm just looking to make people's lives more easy. You know, make it easier for people to keep Pesach and do the right thing and focus on what they have to do. But for instance, like I personally think, like Reese's peanut butter cups are kosher Pesach. I mean, if you look at the ingredients, unless they added wheat since the last time I checked, there's no chametz in it, and the only issue is peanuts and maybe corn syrup. So I think that's perfectly acceptable, even though it's a major ingredient. I don't think it's the majority anyway, because they put so much junk into it with the peanuts. It's not, I don't know if it's the first ingredient or not, or if it's more than 50% of the product. But, you know, a lot of candy and a lot of yogurts and a lot of ice creams that are not officially kosher Pesach, I think, are perfectly acceptable to use on Pesach.
Is there any reason not to buy something like dry roasted almonds, or you have to buy them whole, or
it's fine as long as the ingredients are kosher
Pesach. Well, they're OU. The Trader Joe's dry roasted almonds.
Right.
That you buy all the time.
No, but I'm saying OU. I don't think it would be applicable to nuts. But OU doesn't say anything about whether it has chametz in it.
No.
So as long as if it doesn't have chametz in the ingredients, then it's fine. Yeah. I mean, the roasting process won't change anything.
Okay.
The oils, a lot of the oils, they also say like anything made out of a seed oil, they call kidney oat. Seeds are not kidney oat. Only beans are kidney oat. You know, green beans are not kidney oat. These things are not kidney oat. They're adding a tremendous amount of things to it. I think it's not permissible to do what they're doing. I don't think it's allowed. They're not allowed to add things. And I think the reason they do it is because they're protecting their business. Because if they would say corn is okay, then they would basically, everyone would know, stop buying that hasher. And they would lose their business. And that's not a legitimate reason for me to restrict my life at that level so that this kosher agency could make business. I mean, they're allowed to make business, and they're very beneficial to the Jewish people, and it helps us a lot because they make things kosher and they give us a lot of conveniences. But at the same time, that doesn't mean I have to restrict myself. If I live in a place it's hard for me to get kosher food, then I have to make myself crazy because they have to have business. That's, you know, it doesn't mean I have to restrict myself to that level. Then in terms of, dog food. So dog food is basically, the issue with dog food is that, or cat food. So I use what's core. Core is all protein. And it's not, there's no grain. Oh, I left the...
Yeah,
you saw it in there?
I saw it.
If it has any of the five grains, it's still a problem, because you're not allowed to benefit from five grains. So if it has wheat, barley, oats, rye, spelt, then you cannot use the dog food or cat food. However, if the only issue is kidney oat, even if it's rice, even if it's majority rice, it's okay. Kidney oat you can benefit from. And it's not called, you just can't eat it. But if a dog eats it, then it's okay. But if I don't think most dog foods or cat foods have a majority rice or corn or anything like that. Corn, like I said, is not kidney oat anyway.
So most wet foods are probably fine.
Most wet foods are usually okay. You just have to look at the ingredients, make sure there's no five grains in it.
A lot of them have like grains in them.
They do.
You have to be careful. You look at the ingredients.
The cheap ones have, but the ones that are very healthy are mostly protein. So
I said have like they don't like give it up Chicago, but they'll say like this brand and this type of food, like they say it doesn't have chametz. So you can look it up on the internet.
Right. So yeah, I think the kosher agencies are basically on board with this, that they say that kidney oat is okay and just chametz is not okay. So I think that it's accurate to the lists. But I was just reading ingredients. I use Core. That's a brand. It's the name of a cat food. It's not a brand. It's called Nature something. I forgot the name of it. But basically, it's a healthy brand of cat food. We use it during the year, and it happens to be. We read the ingredients. And it's Kosher Pesach. We're lucky. We don't have to change the cat food over.
Or Pesach.
Yeah, and basically go to the pet store. If your pet food has chametz in it, then just go to a pet store and just look at the cat food with the ingredients on it and see which ones don't have any chametz in it. And then you can buy that product. And again, when you read ingredients, you have to be careful to make sure you know what every ingredient is. Make sure it's not other five grains. Okay.
What level of... Because there's like, what about other pet foods for other pets?
Any pet. It can't benefit. Can't benefit from chametz. That's the problem.
But at some point, certain pet food isn't ochel kelav anyway.
Nechel ochel kelav?
Yeah.
Well, fish food.
Like fish food, a dog's not going to eat, well, maybe it will.
Dog will eat anything.
Dogs eat everything.
If it's food, it'll eat it.
Fair enough.
So I think that any pet food is an issue. And everyone should say bittel should be mevatel chametz, by the way. Even if you don't check, whatever, but everyone should say their own bittel, because everyone who has their own ownership over chametz needs to nullify their own chametz. Okay, so then the only other thing we could discuss, if you want to, is the Seder. Does anyone have any questions about products or food or anything like that? Oh yeah, I didn't mention that. So koshering pots and pans, very easy. Basically, first of all, we have to make sure it's a kosherable material, which is metal, and then basically metal. The other products, other materials, you have to look into to see whether you can kosher them or not. Basically, it depends on the situation. Adam asked me about glasses, for instance. You asked me about glasses?
Oh yeah, I guess for drinking glasses.
So drinking glasses are easy.
But, yeah.
Right, easy to kosher because they're not usually used in a clean rishon. Cooking, they don't cook. You don't cook with glasses. Same thing with like plates. You don't cook with plates, so it's easier to kosher those things, even if they're made out of material that's not generally kosherable, so to speak. So let's start with pots and pans and utensils, metal utensils. So those things are very simple to kosher. You just fill the pot up with water. You put on a stove. You boil it till it bubbles. It doesn't mean bubbling like the whole thing's bubbling, just bubbles coming out. Sometimes you see little bubbles on the bottom. That means it's hot enough that it'll be koshered. And then it should ideally spill over a little bit because that's how the pot is used. And that's how you should kosher something, the way it's used. And then in terms of utensils, just throw in the utensils into the boiling pot and just mix them around. Make sure the water touches every part of them, and you just need to do that for a few seconds after it's boiling. And then you can take them out. I mean, I would take it out with pliers, I wouldn't stick my hand in the boiling hot water or wait till it cools down, but basically that's all you got to do to kosher stuff for Pesach. It's a very simple procedure with the utensils and the pot.
What about a leave and call for like things with like handles and things like that? Or like, let's
say
it's
so
like a piece of plywood that has like a handle.
Right, so generally speaking, you don't cook with those things.
No, I agree.
So the Shach says that if it gets hot, so then it should be kosher. So the best thing to do is either if it can withstand heat, then you just put it in the oven, and then some say you could kosher plastic anyway, so that way it's kosher. If it can't withstand heat, then just you fantastic it. You're fantastic on it, because you don't cook with that part anyway.
No, I know, but you don't have to do the whole Kaylee, I'm saying.
Right, so you should kosher the parts that you can,
okay.
And the other part that you can't, like the plastic part, you just fantastic it, and just wipe it down with fantastic, and that will get rid of any tom inside. And if it can be kosher, then you put it in the oven, and that'll be like leaving kal. Yeah. Some say that's leaving chomer.
Just turn on the range and go over
the. Right, so the frying pan should be done over the fire. Should be done. Turned upside down and right side up on a fire for a few seconds. It burns it out. And if it has like some coating, so some say that's not okay because the coating is not kosherable because Teflon or something like that, because it's like similar to plastic. So if it's a financial loss, you could kosher it. And if it's not a financial loss, it's better not to kosher that. Yeah.
My pot covers aren't fully metal, like the metal rims of the glass.
Yeah.
Are those kosher also?
Yeah. So I'm leaning with those, and I just cover the pot when they're on the boiling water, and ideally you could turn upside down also. And if you get both sides in boiling water, so to speak. The right side up is not going to be in boiling water. It's just going to be on top of boiling water as steam hits it, because that's the way you usually cook with it. And turn upside down, or put in the oven. That'll do Lieben, at least Lieben Kahl, which is the same as Hagalah, if you can't do it on top of the pot. And that'll kosher the glass, because glass is a difference of opinion whether you can kosher or not. But according to most, the Rama says you can't. It's like Klicheris, but at the same time, most posts can argue with the Rama, say you can't kosher glass, or that it doesn't need to be kosher at all. So the best thing to do is just make sure it's very clean. And by the way, you should wait 24 hours before koshering anything, ideally. You should not use it for 24 hours before you kosher anything. And then you have the advantage that's mostly time of calm, so to speak. And then if you want to, fantastic that also, sometimes, that's not a bad idea. Because according to the opinions that say you can't kosher, at least you're putting in, not edible taste into the pot to cover. So. What do you mean? Oh, you mean you don't cover it? Yeah, I mean you don't have to do that. That's like a little over the top. There's no reason you have to inconvenience yourself like that. Just kosher it, So that's basically how I do that. And then, basically, if you can get away with not using plastic utensils or that have been used on the fire, so to speak, Corel or all these other products that are potentially like earthenware or some whole, like earthenware, it's better not to use them. If you need them, then you could kosher basically all these things just by putting them in the oven or the way they're usually used. So if they use like a casserole in the oven, you should put them in the oven for like a half hour. And then they'll kosher. If it's used on the top of the stove, then you should kosher with water on top of the stove. It really depends how they're used. So I think, does that cover all types of utensils? I don't know if there's probably more. Frying pans. Yeah. Whatever. That's the general rule. Basically how you use it is how you should kosher it. Okay, so matzah. So you shouldn't eat matzah in Erev Pesach. Because you should want to eat matzah with the appetite. And in terms of matzah on Pesach, so there's a lot of questions of how much you have to eat. So basically, Rav Heinemann told us that if you want to be eat it properly, then you just have to eat basically half of a sheet of matzah amount for each kazayas. And there's basically at least two kazayasim, it's actually three kazayasim for matzah, for the first achilas matzah, and then for the sandwich, and then for afikoman. So all three of those, you should ideally eat a half a matzah. If you can't do that because you're stuffed or whatever, then you can eat a quarter of a matzah amount. So just do the equivalent of at least a quarter of a matzah, and you fulfill your obligation. Rav Heinemann told us that a lot of people say it's not enough matzah. So he said that if you get up to heaven after 120, and they ask you, why didn't you eat enough matzah, tell them that they should call him. So you get up there.
I have my sheet of matzah, can you get square ones?
Square ones. So it's not a lot of matzah, really. It's not that much. It's a matzah and a half that you got to eat.
Why is the shiur for achilat matzah kibitza? You know what I mean? Like
He made a whole cheshbon about why that's a kibitza. The reason is because the Noda Behuda says that our eggs got smaller. So in other words, the way if we would measure our eggs today, the amount of an egg today would be the equivalent of a kazayas back then. So therefore, you have to eat the amount of an egg because an egg is two kazayas.
And we're doing machmir because it's afikoman.
Right. That's right. It's the raisa.
Okay.
It's biblical. So that's why we're stringent. So he came out with that. Basically, you could figure out the same amount either way. Well, so that's why half a matzah works. In other words,
no,
if
I was
you hold,
reading that and I was trying to figure out, like, are there two mitzvot that I'm missing? Because it said to eat a kibbeza for, like,
no.
Say, asking
the reason it's a kibbeza is because it's two kizasim and because we're afraid that the amounts got smaller, so they're half the
okay.
size. Yeah, so if you sell, if you go, to, anyone going to a different time zone for Pesach? Where?
Chicago.
Okay, that's important. Did you tell me that?
I don't know.
Okay, so write it in the email. Write me an email, because I got to put you on a different list.
Oh.
Because you're going to be there at the end of Pesach?
No.
Oh, the end of Pesach being Philly?
Yeah.
Okay, that's okay.
You just want to buy it back for you when you're...
Right.
No.
You buy it back, you shouldn't buy back chametz on the East Coast time if it's still Pesach in the West Coast or in the Central.
I see.
So we should wait. We have to wait a little bit more time if someone's on the West Coast or not on the East Coast. It's West in a different time zone. And if you're East in a different time zone, then it's a problem. Like if you're in Israel, you got to sell the chametz earlier. Right? All right, so if you have questions about making stuff for the Seder, basically the first Seder, second Seder, you have to prepare one to the next day, one day to the next. So you could be lenient. It's a rabbinical restriction for preparing for one day of Pesach to the next day. So the way around it is basically either prepare early enough in the day that you could benefit from whatever you're making on the first day of Pesach, and just don't say this is for after Pesach, after tonight. Because if you say that, then you're basically declaring what you're doing is preparing for the next day. But if you make it and it's ambiguous, because who knows, maybe you're making it for lunch, maybe you're making it for a snack, you're cooking, whatever you're doing.
Everyone makes chorus at 11 a.m.
Right.
To have like one spoonful.
Right.
And in case they want
That's
more.
What I'm saying. So anything you do to prepare, you should do early enough in the day that you can benefit from it. And it's also permissible to do it after sunset, because after sunset is already questionable whether it's this day or the next day. And since it's rabbinical, you can be lenient on after sunset. So even though the books don't tell you this, that's my practice. What else? Egg matzah.
That's awesome.
It's better not to use egg matzah if you can avoid it. If someone needs it because they're sick or because they're old, then they can eat it. What else? You could start the Seder, by the way, early. Early means the best thing to do is to start it after sunset. We try to help start, we're going to try to daven as fast as possible so that people get home to start the Seder as early as possible. And it's late, you know, because they changed the clock. So I think sunset is about 7:20-something, Pesach, if I'm not mistaken. 7:15-ish. So you could start to Seder at that point in time. You don't have to wait till nightfall, even though the books will tell you you have to wait till nightfall.
Is that the same subject you're saying for preparing?
It's more than that, because
it's Derevon, the Arba Kosher Derevon.
So the only reason you can is because it says Erev Tov L'Matzah, so you have to eat the matzahs at night.
Okay, so don't do Magi in 3 minutes.
No, exactly. In other words, you should finish, say some of Magid during, after nightfall, which is almost certainly going to happen if you start after Shkia. And the Shulchan Aruch holds Shkia is really nightfall. And the fact is, you're allowed to bring Yom Tov early. Everyone brings Yom Tov early. The only question is, can you say the Seder or eat matzah? But chances are, you're not going to get to matzah, or you're going to say some of the Seder after nightfall. As long as you start, if you start at sunset, it only takes 25 to 40 minutes to get to nightfall. So as long as some of the Seder is set at night, and as long as you eat the matzah after the nightfall, then you can start early. If you really need to, you could start after Chag HaMincha, which is about an hour and a half prior, which is, you can start as early as, that means as early as, let's say, 6 o'clock. But ideally, you shouldn't eat matzah until after nightfall, which is about, I don't know, 8 o'clock. So, alright, I think that's basically most of the issues. Drink 4 cups of wine. You don't have to drink about 3 ounces each cup. Ideally, you should drink the whole cup, so therefore you should get a small cup. Mara is a mitzvah also, the Rabbanan. You do not have to kill yourself for Mara. Romaine lettuce is completely acceptable. You don't have to worry about bugs. Just clean it, just wash them off. You should look at the to make a quick inspection if you want of your lettuce leaf. If you buy not washed romaine lettuce, just make sure there's no bugs on it. But you don't have to be crazy about it. But just if you soak it, it's better. Wash it. But basically, that's a way to not not get around horseradish, which is not always ideal for people to eat on Pesach. And horseradish should not have vinegar in it. Shouldn't eat a cold horseradish. Plain horseradish on for the mitzvah, because you shouldn't have stuff mixed into it. What else? There's a lot of other things. Leaning some say it's a mitzvah on Pesach. It's not a separate mitzvah, it's part of the other mitzvahs.
Leaning.
Lean to the left, right.
Assuming that everyone should be leaning. Right. Women or
the custom for women is to lean. Some say not, but you can treat everyone equally.
I was just pointing out that there's a lot of discussion on that.
Yeah, there is.
I'm not saying.
Why? Because there's a question whether women have the same obligation of freedom on Pesach. Ramah says that nowadays women lean because they
Nashim Kafshuva. All considered Kafshuva or something. Nashim Kafshuva. All women are Kafshuva, so they should lean or something.
Right. But there's a question whether they had the obligation to begin with. Whether women had the obligation to begin with. What's the reason? I have to remember the reason. Yeah, I gotta think about it. Let me says it here. Ramah seems to say that nowadays you don't make any difference in men and women in terms of leaning. All right. Anyway, any other questions? Okay. So I think we're good. If you have any questions that come up, feel free to email me or text me or whatever it is. Chances are questions will come up. All I can do is just look it up on my Android. My pleasure.